Welcome back to the deep dive. We are jumping right into the custom-tailored analysis you requested, and I have to say, the source material you provided for us today is genuinely one of the most unconventional challenges we've ever taken on.
Oh, absolutely. It immediately challenges our standard methodology.
It really does, because your document arrived with this simple, unassuming title, Pasted Text. And normally, a title like that hints at a massive unformatted data dump, like a sprawling wiki page or a chaotic thread of corporate emails or dense layers of raw analytics.
Basically, the kind of things we usually parse through.
Exactly. But when we opened your file to start the synthesis, okay, let's unpack this. There was absolutely no traditional text. Zero arguments, zero data points, zero sentences.
Just a complete void of conventional surface-level content.
The document consists entirely of 10 sequential image placeholders, just 10 bracketed lines indicating where visual information used to exist before it was stripped away.
There's no thesis to highlight and no statistical evidence to cross-reference.
Which is wild.
It is. But dismissing this as a simple copy-paste error or an empty file would be a critical analytical failure.
Right, because there's still a structure there.
Exactly. What we actually have in front of us, precisely because the visual data itself is missing, is the pure, unadulterated architecture of the information.
The blueprint.
Yes, the blueprint. We are going to spend our time today analyzing the structural formatting, the sequence, and the deliberate spacing of these missing visuals to reconstruct the narrative you sent us.
So we are essentially looking at the foundational blueprints rather than the building itself.
Precisely.
To begin that reconstruction, we have to look at the very first thing that appears in your source text. It's a tightly grouped trio.
Right at the top of the page.
Yeah, right at the top. The text reads bracket image underscore placeholder underscore one close bracket. That is immediately followed on the very next line by placeholder two.
And right beneath that, placeholder three.
Exactly. There are no breaks, no paragraph spaces. It is a solid, impenetrable block of three missing images.
What's fascinating here is the underlying concept of a placeholder as a digital contract.
A digital contract. I like that framing.
Yeah, because in information architecture, a placeholder is not just a void or an error message. It is a highly specific marker indicating that visual data belongs in this exact location.
It's holding a spot for something important.
More importantly, it shows that this data was deemed significant enough to warrant a dedicated numbered indexing. The author, or the system that generated this layout, is actively acknowledging an absence.
By leaving the placeholder intact rather than just letting the text collapse.
Right. The architecture preserves the original promise made to the reader.
That idea of a preserved promise really connects to how you, as a listener, constantly navigate the modern digital landscape.
We do it every day.
We do. You're constantly scrolling through feeds or dashboards or proprietary research platforms where elements fail to load.
And it's jarring when that happens.
It is. When you encounter that broken link or the missing image icon, your brain immediately registers the disruption. It tries to solve the mystery of what was supposed to be there based on the surrounding context.
It's human nature to fill in the blanks.
Exactly. So because these first three placeholders are clustered so tightly without any white space, my initial instinct is to read them as a deliberate narrative arc.
Like a rapid-fire sequence of visual evidence meant to be absorbed in a single glance.
Yes, exactly that.
While viewing it as a curated artistic sequence is one way to interpret the tight grouping, we also have to consider the highly functional, even mundane realities of digital formatting.
What do you mean by mundane realities?
Well, it is highly probable that this initial block was simply a standard utilitarian data table. Or maybe a multi-column chart that collapsed vertically during the copy-paste process.
Oh, sure, just a formatting glitch.
But even a collapsed table tells us something vital. It indicates a massive density of information at the very beginning of the document.
Because all those data points were clustered together originally.
Exactly. The lack of white space dictates the specific cognitive rhythm. It demands that the viewer process this initial burst of evidence comprehensively and all at once.
It's establishing a heavy baseline of authority before the document moves forward.
Precisely.
So whether it was a deliberate three-part diagram or a collapsed data matrix, the function remains the same. It's a concentrated, heavy dose of information right out of the gate.
We are essentially establishing the terms of the argument.
Right. And once those terms are established, the document fundamentally shifts its pacing. Here's where it gets really interesting.
The transition.
Yes, immediately following that dense block of placeholders one, two, and three, Your source document features a distinct, deliberate structural line break.
A physical gap of empty space in the text.
Exactly. Only after crossing that visual gap do we arrive at the next sequence, which is image placeholders 4, 5, and 6, and those are again grouped tightly together.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that line break is arguably the most crucial piece of architectural data we've encountered.
More crucial than the placeholders themselves.
I would argue yes. In the realm of structural formatting, a line break functions as cognitive punctuation.
Cognitive punctuation.
By grouping these missing images into distinct blocks separated by white space, the architecture reveals a highly structured, segmented narrative. This is not a random, chaotic dump of 10 images.
The break implies a definitive thematic shift.
It signals that we have formally exited the introductory phase or the baseline data set, and we are now moving into a second distinct chapter of the visual argument.
The introduction of white space as a tool for cognitive pacing is a fascinating takeaway here. We can almost think about it in terms of physical architecture.
How so?
Well, imagine walking through a sprawling, brutalist museum where all the exhibits have been removed, but the mounting hardware remains on the bare concrete walls.
That's a great visual.
You enter the first gallery space and find three display mounts clustered tightly together. You absorb the density of that specific exhibit.
Which represents our first three placeholders.
Exactly. But to get to the next set of mounts, the architect forces you to walk down a long, empty, unadorned corridor.
And that physical corridor serves the exact same function as our line break.
Right. It forces a transition. You can't just stumble into the next exhibit.
The physical space between those groups of information forces a necessary cognitive reset. In user interface design and information theory, this is a known mechanism to combat decision fatigue.
It gives your brain a second to breathe.
Yes. When you arrive at the second block and encounter placeholders 4, 5, and 6, you understand implicitly through the architecture that these are related to the first three.
They're part of the same overarching document.
But they are making a functionally separate point. If the first block established the historical context of a problem, the line break gives you the mental breath required to pivot,
preparing you to consume the second block, which might illustrate the present-day methodology for solving it.
Precisely. It's formatting as psychological management.
And we really can't ignore the continuation of the structural pattern here. This second block is also exactly three placeholders long.
We have a trio, a deliberate pause, and then another trio.
It is leaning heavily into the rule of three, which is a deeply ingrained heuristic in human cognitive processing.
The architecture is actively managing the flow of information by segmenting it into these mathematically harmonious, balanced blocks.
The creator of the original document, or the algorithm that generated, is ensuring that the data remains digestible.
The symmetry demonstrates a highly sophisticated control over the reader's cognitive load.
Rather than presenting a continuous, overwhelming scroll of 6 or 9 images,
which inherently causes analytical fatigue and causes users to skim past nuanced middle data points, the structure here demands a measured consumption.
It forces the reader to internalize the first premise entirely, utilize the white space to clear the buffer, and then examine the next logical progression.
This segmented approach is the absolute hallmark of complex technical writing, executive summaries, and high-level persuasive formatting.
It really highlights how much heavy lifting the unseen formatting actually does when we consume media. When the visual data is present, we are completely distracted by the content.
We rarely notice the paragraph margins, the slide transitions, or the subtle padding between web elements.
But when you strip the document down to this bare skeleton, you realize that every single gap and grouping is an active manipulation of how you perceive the information.
Which perfectly sets up the final and structurally most significant section of the document you provided.
Yes, it does. Because just as we become accustomed to this specific segmented rhythm, the pattern is intentionally shattered.
The structural integrity we just analyzed is purposely disrupted, and that disruption is where the true hierarchy of the document reveals itself.
Let's look at how that happens. Following the second block, we encounter another line break another empty corridor in our hypothetical museum.
We cross that gap.
And we find exactly what the established pattern has trained us to expect. Image placeholder 7, placeholder 8, and placeholder 9.
They are grouped tightly together, maintaining the exact rhythm of the previous sections.
So we now have three distinct blocks of three, a completely balanced 9-part grid of structural information.
If your document ended right there, it would be a closed, perfectly symmetrical loop.
But it doesn't end there. It continues. There is one final line break.
And following that gap, is a solitary, completely isolated sequence. Image placeholder 10.
There is no trio. It is not part of a cluster. It sits entirely alone at the very bottom of the source text. So what does this all mean?
This raises an important question regarding visual authority and the ultimate intent of the author. Why does a meticulously established, perfectly symmetrical pattern of threes suddenly break at the terminal point of the document?
It has to be deliberate.
In any form of structured communication, whenever an established rhythmic pattern is intentionally broken, it is a mechanism designed to command absolute, undivided attention.
That final singular placeholder is the climax of the architecture.
It represents the ultimate piece of evidence, the synthesis of the data, or the incontrovertible bottom line of the original material.
The shift from a clustered comparative reading experience to a singular focus is a massive architectural pivot.
It is.
With the previous blocks, your attention was inherently divided. When you look at placeholders 7, 8, and 9, you are forced to compare them against one another to find the context.
But by isolating placeholder 10, the structure strips away all competing data.
The negative space surrounding that final placeholder operates as a spotlight. It demands a singular focus,
indicating that this specific piece of missing visual data carries more weight than anything that preceded it.
We must consider the psychological weight of that negative space.
In typography and layout design, negative space is never passive. It is an active structural element that creates gravity.
The vast amount of white space separating placeholder 10 from the dense, complex blocks above it gives it an undeniable visual authority.
If the first 9 placeholders represented the complex, multifaceted puzzle pieces of an argument, the isolated 10th placeholder is the picture on the front of the box.
I love that comparison. It is the definitive conclusion that can only be presented after the segmented groundwork has been fully articulated and understood.
You can clearly see how that isolation translates to a real-world presentation environment.
Right. Think about watching an executive walk through a complex slide deck. They would build momentum through the clustered data points,
leveraging that dense comparative information to build their case.
Then they would force a pause, our final line break. They would transition to a slide that contains just a single isolated chart or a lone metric.
The lack of clutter on that final slide is what gives the metric its unquestionable authority. The isolation is the argument.
The position itself dictates the synthesis. The document does not begin with an isolated image, nor does it hide the isolated image in the middle of a complex block.
It is the terminal point. This tells us that the original narrative you provided is fundamentally cumulative.
The heavy lifting of the argument is done in the dense, clustered sections,
while the final isolated placeholder exists solely to solidify the conclusion. It is a brilliant utilization of formatting to ensure that the reader walks away with one specific, undeniable takeaway.
It is genuinely remarkable to step back and look at the journey we just took through a document titled Pasted Text that initially appeared to contain nothing at all.
By shifting our perspective away from the missing surface-level content and focusing entirely on the structural layout, we've decoded a highly sophisticated framework.
We identified an initial promise of dense data, analyzed the use of white space as a tool for cognitive pacing and mitigating decision fatigue.
And finally, observed how breaking an established pattern creates massive visual authority and undeniable focus.
This analysis provides a distinct 3-part framework for how we can understand structural intent.
First, the proximity of elements establishes the initial digital contract and data density.
Second, the strategic implementation of negative space dictates the cognitive rhythm and prevents analytical burnout.
And finally, the intentional isolation of an element at the terminal point of a sequence establishes the ultimate hierarchy and synthesizes the preceding arguments.
And bringing this all back to you, the listener, this structural deep dive serves as a highly practical lens for how you process the relentless stream of documents, reports, and digital media in your own daily life.
Even when the core data is obscured, redacted, or completely missing,
the skeletal framework left behind tells a rich, objective story about how that knowledge was meant to be organized.
It reveals how the creator intended to pace your consumption and manipulate your focus to guide you toward a specific conclusion.
Formatting is never just a passive aesthetic choice. The architecture itself is an active, persuasive argument.
The framework frequently communicates more about the author's intent than the data housed within it.
Absolutely.
And as we wrap up this architectural analysis, I want to pivot away from our own human cognition for a moment and offer a different perspective to consider as you navigate your digital archives.
Let's hear it.
When we look at these empty brackets and line breaks, we apply human psychology, cognitive load, visual authority, breathing room.
Right.
But consider what happens when a large language model or an automated data scraping tool parses this exact same document a decade from now.
Oh, that's interesting.
AI does not experience decision fatigue, nor does it require visual white space to take a breath. Yet it is being trained on these incredibly human structural artifacts.
It's learning our rhythms.
Exactly. As you encounter formatting anomalies and empty placeholders in your own research, ask yourself, how will the algorithms of the future interpret the empty spaces we leave behind?
Will they learn to mimic our need for visual pacing?
Or will they hallucinate entirely new meanings within the blank corridors of our digital architecture?
That is an incredibly compelling angle on the future of information structure. Thank you for sending us such a uniquely challenging piece of source material and for letting us take this deep dive into the hidden blueprints of your data. Keep examining the invisible frameworks around you, and we will see you on the next deep dive.